Welcome to Greek Club, broadcasting live.
Do you broadcast anymore? You stream or something, don't you? Yeah. Streaming live? Yeah, okay. Whatever. Well, here we are. We are live, and it is week 10 of the term, so the students at whom I'm looking, most of them seem to be barely alive. But it is week 10 in our term, so I will mention this, that we will not be having Greek Club for 2 weeks. And then we will pick up, I think the Monday of that first week of the term is about the 27th or 6th or 28th. Anyway, that week we will resume our reading here in 2 Corinthians. And I believe that we got through verse 8, chapter 11, verse 8 last time. And Paul here is talking about how he wasn't a burden to the Corinthians. In verse 8 then, the verb sulao there, esulesa, means to defraud or rob. And what Paul says there is, I robbed other churches by taking financial support, opsonion is a wage or something like that, toward your service. Which means in order to serve you or something like that. And then you see there's a comma there, and then verse 9 picks up the thought, and he'll continue that thought. So verse 9 would conceivably sound something like this: Kai par on pros humas kai histere theis ou kat en ark eza uthanas. Tagar histeremamu prus an epleroson hoi adelfoi elthontas apa makadanias kai en panti abare hemautan humin et teresa kai tereso. So we start with two participles. Par on is from paremi, which means to be present or to arrive. We get our word parousia from that. And then histerethes, which is from histereo, which means to lack or fall short or something like that. As far as I can tell, the passive of histereo always seems to have an active meaning. So if you weaseled the participles initially, it would be, and being present with you and lacking. Now the verb comes, ou kat en ar kesa. This is from kata narkao. And I know that because I had to look it up. I had no idea what this meant. Narkao means to grow stiff or to grow numb. And normally a kata prefix will intensify the meaning, sort of like krino means judge and katakrino means condemn, right? The lexicon suggests here that we gloss this, and they're following some of the fathers, apparently, I think Chrysostom and others, to burden or be a burden. And I wonder if the picture is I thought of rigor mortis. You know, we stiffened up. We didn't stiffen up and in that sense become like dead weight, maybe? I'm not sure, but maybe that's the picture. At the very least, it parses as a weak aorist indicative. You can see the augment is there, the kat e, and then the sigma and the alpha would be the weak sigma stem, and then the alpha without any other ending is characteristic of the weak aorist, like elusa. So just aorist indicative active, first singular. So we didn't become a burden, and this verb takes the genitive. In English, we would say to anyone, uthenos. Now, uthenos might cause you to stop because we normally would see udenos, but it's simply an alternate spelling. You just get, instead of udes, you get uthes. Instead of uden, you get uthen. So that would just parse as masculine singular genitive. So maybe we'll take the participles temporally. And while we were present with you and maybe even the second one, concessive, even though we lacked something, we did not become a burden to anyone. For our lacking, our hysterema, our need, you might even say almost, the brothers, hoi adelphoi, filled up, pros anapleirao. You know, the Gospel of Luke loves these compound verbs, and when you look them up in the dictionary, they often mean just the same thing as the regular verb, which is just a way to get you to use the dictionary, right? So, the brothers filled up our, or fulfilled our need, coming from Macedonia, temporal translation, when they came from Macedonia. And in everything, now the verb, eteresa, from terao, to guard or keep, I kept myself, hemautan is the direct object, not a burden. Abare, baros means heavy or burdensome, and you just put the alpha privative on the front of it, and it means not burdensome. So I kept myself not burdensome to you, and tereso, I will keep. So again, Paul is, you know, he's fending them off, something like that. Yeah.
At the beginning of verse 9, is there a reason why you are translating those as first-person plurals?
No, probably because I was making a mistake. Okay. Yeah, they are, they're singular participles, right? So that should be when I was present and so forth, right? I was just including myself with the Apostle Paul. I was identifying with the text. Yeah, exactly. I was just making a mistake. Right. I actually know someone. One of our pastors met his fiance and now his wife in Macedonia. Isn't that interesting? I've never even been to Macedonia. See? So again, it's not too hard, actually. Once you look up a few words, and it's a little bit more of a Pauline sentence. I was very happy that all the participles had obvious reference. I mean, we had real trouble there for a couple of chapters. So, good. Other questions, comments? Okay, good. Verse 10. And maybe we'll get 11 too, since it's short. Paul says, Estin aletheia Christou enemoi, hati he kaugesis haute, u phragesitai es eme. En tois klimas en tais akaias, akaias, diate, hati uk agapo himas, hathaias oiden. This first one, it's interesting, the English translations, I think, tend to go with something like, as there is truth in Christ, or something like that. Woodenly, you just translate maybe there is the truth of Christ, or there is Christ's truth in me, that this boast, hey kauchesis haute, note the rough breathing, that's what helps distinguish it as the demonstrative pronoun. And this is one of these little grammar rules that actually does occasionally come in handy. Remember that the demonstrative pronoun, when it's modifying a noun, will always stand in predicate position. So, hey, kaukesis. You would never see, hey, haute, kaukesis, right? Well, wouldn't ever. You know anything's possible, but you shouldn't. So, there is Christ's truth in respect to me, and the sense seems to be, and this is what it is. This is the truth. It's kind of like Paul... He's asseverating, you know. He's solemnly stating that this my boast, ou phragesitai. This is from phraso, and it's a strong sixth principal part. This is actually the future indicative passive of phraso. You might hope for something like phragthesitai, and that way you'd recognize the theta, eta, sigma stem. But the sixth principal part is just ephragain. So this is future indicative passive, third singular. And this boast will not be shut up. Phraso means to close or shut. This is the verb, by the way, in Romans 3, 19 and 20. We know that whatever this speaks... Oh, let's take a look at it, actually. Romans 3, just as an illustration. 19. So Paul says in Romans 3:19, And we know that as much as the law says, to the in the law people it speaks. Why? In order that every mouth phrage. That's actually the aorist passive subjunctive. Every mouth be closed. Every mouth be stopped. So here, Paul is insistent that this boast will not be stopped in relation to me in the regions of Achaia. I will not stop operating this way, that is to say, without asking for any help from you. And then verse 11, why? On account of what? He says, because I do not love you, right? That's a good reminder, by the way. The form agapo is a good reminder that you never see the uncontracted contract verbs in the text itself. You get agapao in the dictionary, but it's always contracted. So that, although it could be a subjunctive, it's just present indicative active. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows. And then presumably you fill in that I do, right? You know, socioculturally, remember that one of the things that Paul has been insistent on avoiding is getting into a benefactor-patron relationship with any of the wealthy in Corinth, because he knows now he's beholden to them, see? And although we don't operate that way, we don't have that kind of a culture, it is actually important not to become too beholden to wealthy people or powerful people in the congregation, right? Because money, well, money is money, and power is power, right? One of the coolest things I ever saw as a young pastor was in our circuit meeting, we were talking about casuistry, and somehow this issue came up, and one of the pastors in a larger congregation actually shared with us that one of his members had wanted to give a sizable amount of money for a project in the congregation, and he actually asked him to give it outside the congregation. The pastor actually asked the wealthy person, you know, please be generous, but do it someplace else, because he thought it would, you know, really become a hindrance to the dynamic of the life of the congregation. And it doesn't always have to be that way, of course, but you can see, you know, easily how it could. And so Paul is refusing to let any of them be his patron, see, but he's doing it because he loves them. See, if he's not free from that relationship, he can't be the apostle that he needs to be. And there are all kinds of implications for pastoral ministry here, but that would be way too interesting. This is a Greek club. We do grammar, right, in Greek club.
Would that be the reason why he accepted from Macedonia?
Exactly.
And not from them?
He robbed other churches to avoid.
Macedonia,
yep.
Is not a rich church.
Exactly. Yep. They're not highfalutin. I think that's the technical term, the way they are in Corinth. Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, it's good to see, I suppose, that the church is a profoundly human place in the first century, just because it is that way now. So, good. Anything else on this paragraph? At least the text tells us we've come to the end of a paragraph. So, okay, so this isn't too bad. Verse 12. Hadapoyo kai poieso. Hina ekapso tain aformain ton thelanton aformain. Hina en ho kaukontai hu rethosen kathos kai hemes. So we start with a relative pronoun. What I am doing, also I will do. It would be nice if we had tuta, right? This which I am doing, also I will do. But just as in English, we often omit, and you didn't even know you did this, we often omit the antecedent of a relative pronoun. We say things like, I saw what you saw, right? Strictly speaking, there's two words in there, I saw that which you saw. But we just kind of glom them together, and Greek does the same thing very routinely. As Dr. Vels describes in his not-so-fundamental Greek grammar. So what I am doing also I will do. I'm not going to stop the way I operate, Paul says. And he has a purpose, hina, right? And the main verb of the clause is heorethosen. in order that they may be found just as also we. And then you have the relative clause, in relation to which they are boasting. This is a little unclear. I think Paul is about to mention who they are in verse 13. And the point seems to be that he wants it to become clear that there's no distinction between himself and his co-workers. And notice, by the way, the shift there to we, which I suppose includes Paul's apostolic co-workers, right? Let's see. I kind of skipped the middle part there. What I am doing also I will do, in order that I may cut off ek kapto, that would be the weak aorist subjunctive active, first singular, the aphormein. An aphormein is an excuse or an occasion or a pretext, okay? You see this in commentaries, and I think people mention it just because it's cool. It can also refer to a base camp, like a forward position from which you build off and launch onto another expedition. But it just means an excuse, right? In order that I may cut off the excuse of the ones who want an excuse, presumably an excuse to compare and to criticize me, because Paul is in the business of defending himself here. So, and again, heorethe, heorethosin is just the aorist subjunctive passive from heurisko, right? Okay, good. Comments, questions? Here in week 10. Dave, what is that? Is that like an I something? What is that thing?
It's an iPad.
It's an iPad,
yeah,
okay.
It has like lexicons and other things.
Yeah. Does it have the critical apparatus? I've always wondered.
You can get that.
You can get that, okay. Yeah, cool. Okay. Yeah, I'm in awe here at Greek Club. We have this little electronic thing. So, great. I still think we should say broadcasting. I'm broadcasting. I don't know what anybody else is doing, but all right. Okay, verse 13. Maybe we'll take that and then we can stop. Sorry, there's no verb. We'll just supply the linking verb. Hoigar toi uptoi psud apostoloi. Ergatai daleoi, meta schema tidzamenoi eis apostolus Christu. Paul's leveling the playing field here, although he seems to be doing even more than that. Notice we have all nominatives here, so we have subjects and we have predicate nominatives, right? So I think a way to do it would be for such ones, toi utas means of such a sort or such a kind. So take the article with that. Such ones, and just supply the linking verb, are false apostles, deceitful workers. Now, we could even take this participle, meta schema tidzamenoi, as a substantive, right, since we've had two nouns in a row. Meta schema tidzo can mean, in a positive sense, to transform. I think this is the verb actually in the Matthean transfiguration account, right? But it can also mean to disguise. And it's passive here. Those who are being disguised. I suppose you could even take it as middle, almost in a reflexive sense, who disguise themselves as apostles as unto apostles of Christ. And Paul goes on in verse 14, but we'll stop there. Kai uthauma. And it's just like in English. And no wonder, right? A thauma is a marvel or a wonder. So, but we'll stop there at verse 14. So, again, we'll take a two-week break, and the creation will groan and travail until the return of Greek Club.